Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of Raise the Vibe here on Voice of Vashon's 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Liz Peterson. And today I have Dr. Lisa Morse with me via phone, and she'll be discussing our immune systems. Dr. Lisa Morse is a naturopathic physician practicing here on Vashon Island, but also working with patients across the country via telemedicine. She focuses on helping people who are facing health challenges to become well, so that they have the freedom to live life as they desire. She is especially interested in helping people with gastrointestinal problems as well as autoimmune diseases. She offers a unique kind of healthcare in that she is very dedicated to her patients, helping them to uncover the root cause of their illness. Dr. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. I'm so glad that we can still get together this way, even though we're in the midst of a pandemic. So thank you so much for joining me here on Raise the Vibe.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Cool. Is there anything that you want to chat about to start off? Maybe introduce yourself to the community, who you are, where your practice is in town, and what you offer. Awesome.
Sure. I've been practicing here on Vashon Island since 2016, and I'm currently located right in the middle of town next to the Ace Hardware and Raven's Nest. And let's see, what can I say? Just that, you know, I got into naturopathic medicine due to my own health challenges and not getting answers that I needed from conventional medicine, and here I am helping others overcome their health challenges, and it's just a pleasure for me to be doing that every day.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being part of our community.
Yeah.
Great. So we're in the midst of the pandemic. We're still on lockdown here in King County, and we're all a little fearful, anxious, vulnerable. We're feeling powerless. How do we take control of our health to stay strong, empowered, and healthy these days?
Great question, Liz. Yeah, I think that it's fair to say that our worlds have been turned upside down, and yeah, many of us are feeling anxious and fearful, and my message has been to my patients and try to get out as much as I can to people is that you're not powerless, and there are plenty of things that you can do to stay strong and healthy, and it's not easy. I love to say that, you know, it's taking care of yourself, but the most important thing is just to know that you're not powerless, and a lot of times that will help to reduce, you know, anxiety and fear when we know that there's something that we can do.
Right.
Yeah. I like to call it, is building up your armor.
Great.
Yeah, it's like this coat of armor to protect yourself. And what I would say is that there's two things that we're trying to do in regards to building up our armor. We're trying to keep our immune system strong, and we're trying to keep our inflammation low.
Mm.
And yeah, and that has to do with, obviously, we want our immune system to be strong so we can fight the virus. And one of the things I say is that, you know, we can fight the virus when we become exposed to it, because there is very high likelihood that you will all be exposed to the virus at some point.
Right.
And yeah, it could be like in another year or maybe 2 years,
mm-hmm.
but so, it's going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. So how do we increase the strength of our immune system?
Yeah, good question. There are lots of ways. So in regards to, you know, I was saying inflammation and the strength of the immune system, there's really four main things. I mean, there are a myriad of ways, but there's really four main things that I'd love to focus on today.
Great.
And so basically diet is a huge one. Sleep is a big one. Stress and also your gut health. So all of those affect the strength of our immune system and also our inflammation levels.
Awesome.
One thing I want to say just about the inflammation is that originally it was thought that it was really about older people and the elderly that were very susceptible to the virus and becoming very sick, and
mm-hmm.
that still could be part of the picture, but it's actually more about how much inflammation we have in our body.
Oh,
and so that people Yeah, so people who have higher levels of inflammation going into, you know, being infected, they often become sicker.
So who's more susceptible to inflammation? What are some of the causes?
That's a great question, too. Yeah, so some of the conditions are people with high blood pressure, people with diabetes, asthma, other lung diseases like COPD, people who are overweight. Because when we're overweight and we have that belly fat, that actually produces inflammatory chemicals. So all those people usually have more inflammation. And so even if you don't have those conditions, you can still have a propensity to have inflammation.
I see.
And that's related to those things I was talking about.
Okay.
The diet, sleep, stress, and gut health.
Does cortisol have anything to do with that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. That's exactly what... So cortisol is a hormone that's made by our adrenal glands, which are our stress glands, and cortisol suppresses the immune system. And so, when we have inflammation, we also have cortisol, high cortisol.
I was reading a research recently about how stress levels actually deplete the immune system up to 60%. I thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah.
Just stress.
It is. I have a really interesting story about myself in that.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing, but, you know, I'll go ahead and tell it anyways. So I joined Toastmasters to learn how to speak better.
Mm-hmm.
And after my first speech, which I was stressed about because I'm not really a fan of public speaking. I'm getting better at it. But I sat down after my speech and I felt this lump on my neck and it was sore. It was basically a lymph node. And then I proceeded to get shingles.
Wow.
Shingles is a virus, and the chicken pox and the shingles are the same virus. And so, you know, most of us get chicken pox as children, or we did. And it lives in our cells. And so when I got stressed, that suppressed my immune system, and that virus that was living in my cells, like, just thrived. It just, like, came out and thrived. And so oftentimes, you know, stress brings out the shingles, and sugar is another one, too. Sugar can, I've had people that ate a lot of sugar, and then their immune system got suppressed, and they got an outbreak of shingles. So,
wow, that's an amazing response.
Yeah, but stress is really powerful on our health, and, you know, like I said, it's one of the four main things that I'm trying to focus on with my patients, because it does suppress the immune system, and it also increases inflammation in your body.
Mm. And there's no shortage of stress right now.
It's true. It's true. And so it's not that, you know, there's a lot of stress right now, but we're always going to have stress in our lives.
Yes.
It's more about, like, how we handle it versus whether or not we have it, because we are going to have it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's the root cause of many illnesses. I just find that so much that it's so powerful.
Wow. When you're working with your patients, what are some things that you advise when working with stress?
Yeah. So I just tell everybody, you know, you have to find your way to reduce stress. Not, you know, everyone is different. So some people, you know, do journaling, or some people do meditation or prayer. Some people like to just laugh and be silly. Or some exercise is another really great one. Or even counseling. And that's something that I do with my patients. I do holistic counseling to help them, you know, deal with the stress of whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. Now, right now, I would say if you're particularly fearful or anxious about what's going on with this virus, I tell people, turn off the news. Like, it's not helpful for you. You know, it's just causing more anxiety and fear. And so, yeah, so like I said, it's find your way and then commit to doing it, to whatever it is that you need to do to reduce stress.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
What about sleep? I know a lot of people are having trouble sleeping right now.
Yeah, sleep is a big one. So when we have good sleep, it's it decreases our inflammation and it keeps our immune system strong. What happens is there's certain type of cells called natural killer cells. It's kind of a funny name, but they fight viruses. And so when we have good sleep, we have more natural killer cells. So there's a lot of things that go into getting good sleep. It's called sleep hygiene. You know, the first thing I would say is make sure that you're creating the environment for good sleep. So, you know, in the evening, at the end of the day, we're supposed to be in this relaxing, calming place, not working and doing all kinds of things. We're supposed to be preparing our bodies for sleep. And so, you know, again, find whatever it is that helps you sleep, you know, or get relaxed, excuse me. So, like, maybe you want to take a bath, or maybe you want to read a novel, or, again, you know, meditate, or, yeah, everyone needs to just find whatever it is that resonates with them as far as relaxing at night. The other thing I would say is avoiding the light from computers and electronic devices, which I know is hard.
Yeah, especially right now.
Yeah. So I would say 2 hours before bedtime, because those devices, they emit blue light, and that it's a certain type of light, and it actually suppresses our pineal gland in our brain that produces melatonin. So melatonin helps us to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And so when we have that exposure to light at night, it will suppress our melatonin, which will prevent us from falling asleep well.
Wow.
They actually make, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, Liz, they make blue light blocking glasses.
No, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Of course they have.
Some people will wear those at night, you know, particularly if they are going to be on the computer.
Mm-hmm.
They basically block out the blue light. And there's something, an app on your computer and stuff that you can download as well. It's called Flux, F-L-U-X, and it's currently, like, I don't use it, but it can block out the blue light from your computer or phone.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so, yeah, we just want to keep your melatonin high.
How do we do that?
That's a good question. I was thinking about, like, so as a child, children have the highest levels of melatonin, and there's some thought that that's why they are particularly resistant to this virus as well, because melatonin plays a part in, well, sleep, of course,
mm-hmm.
but it also plays a part in keeping inflammation low, particularly in the lungs. So,
wow.
So, yeah, so as we age, our melatonin decreases. So the answer is just exactly what I was saying. Part of it is keeping the light down. So the other thing is not just the blue light from your computer, but also the lights in your house. You know, having dim lights in the evening time to help your body make melatonin. And if you go in the morning time, when you wake up, if there's light out, which right now it's a good time. If we were having this conversation in the middle of winter, this might be a little bit more challenging. But going outside right away when you wake up and exposing your eyes to the sunlight, that helps to set the circadian rhythm, which helps you produce melatonin at night. So dim light in the evening and bright light in the morning time.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's encouraging to get everybody out for their morning walk.
That's right.
Especially on a beautiful day like today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Why are some more susceptible to this virus than others?
Yeah, so that has to do, like I said, with the amounts of inflammation
mm-hmm.
in the body, and then also, you know, it's and the immune system strength. But I could get really technical on you here, because just, you know, I'm a scientist, so I like to talk about this stuff. But when we have increased inflammation in our bodies, that changes, or it causes the certain receptor that the virus binds to increase on the surface of our cells. So when we have more of those receptors that the virus binds to, then more of the virus can get in. And like I said, increased inflammation increases those receptors.
I think I don't remember if I mentioned this, but
there's this baseline level of inflammation, and then some people that are walking around in the world, they have a higher level of inflammation. And what's making people so getting so sick with this and becoming severe is that, like, the inflammation in the lungs is just overwhelming to the body. And they develop some condition called acute respiratory distress syndrome. And so when there's a higher baseline level of inflammation, there's a shorter amount of distance that a person has to go to get to that particular threshold where they become very sick. The inflammation just becomes crazy. So again, it's about keeping the inflammation low and keeping the inflammation immune system strong.
Wow, I can see where we're not helping this virus at all. You know, a lot of people with poor diet and lack of sleep and overstressed at work or at home, and then our gut health playing into it too. Wow, that is fascinating. You're doing little videos now on YouTube, and I checked them out. They're fantastic. What is it? You were saying that the virus attaches to angiotensin 2. How does that? How does that work with the virus? Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, so ACE2 receptors, they are present on the cells of our heart, our lungs, our gut, and our kidneys. And like I said, the virus has a protein on its surface that binds to that ACE2 receptor, and that's how it enters our cells. And so... So when people have more of the ACE2 receptors on their cells, more of the virus can get in. So, and again, so the increased inflammation results in more ACE2 receptors on the cells. So,
Okay. So keeping with inflammation, let's head into our diet. So how do we decrease with our diet?
Great. Well, I always say there's like the basic steps for a diet, and then there's like the extra extra steps, because everyone's at a different place with their diet, you know, and I know that. I mean, I've changed my diet, you know, over the last 10 years, it's morphed into different things, and, you know, we can't always just jump right into, you know, super duper healthy, but I mean, it's encouraged, but I just like to meet my patients where they're at. So the basics that I tell people are, you know, sugar and processed foods are inflammatory foods, and they are also, the sugar, you know, suppresses the immune system. And again, these foods oftentimes cause us to gain weight, you know, get that belly fat. And like I was saying, the belly fat, you know, leads to inflammation, which leads us to be more susceptible. One of the things with processed foods, so I said sugar and processed foods. So processed foods, those are things that, you know, come in a box. They're not whole foods. They don't grow on a plant. Or processed foods oftentimes have certain types of oils, like plant oils. So vegetable oil, you know, corn oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil. Those oils are pro-inflammatory. They're called omega-6 fatty acids. And have you heard of omega-6 and omega-3, Liz?
Yes.
Okay, good. So omega-6s are pro-inflammatory, and omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. And so our omega-3s are things like fish, fish oils, chia seeds, flax seeds, walnuts. And so it's not that you're going to completely avoid omega-6s in your diet. It's more about the ratio. So in the past, the American diet, I guess, had a ratio of around 4 to 1, so omega-6 to omega-3. But nowadays, our American diet, many people are eating ratios of 20 to 1, so 20 times omega-6s and then 1 to 1 omega-3.
Wow.
And so, and it's because of the processed foods. And so I really encourage people to, you know, eliminate processed foods or it'll just greatly reduce them because of the inflammation that they promote in the body. And so, yeah, so those are the basic ones, the sugar and processed foods.
Are there any more?
Well, so there's, you know, there's other foods that are inflammatory. I mean, those are, I feel like those two are the biggest ones, but
right.
I would say, I mean, there's kind of a little list here. So gluten is one of them, which I know is hard because bread is so good, but it has to do with the gut. And yeah, and I mean, I can talk more about that if you want. But
yeah, that would be great.
So gluten is something that causes our gut in some people, not everybody, but in a good majority of the people, it causes the cells of the gut to separate, and we call that leaky gut.
Mm.
And it's usually a temporary thing, you know, for several hours after we eat gluten. But things get through the gut wall then and into the bloodstream, and then that promotes things that aren't really supposed to be getting through. That promotes inflammation. And so, you know, in general, if you're eating gluten a lot, then it's especially probably causing a problem, you know, causing the gut to be leaky constantly. So that's the main reason that gluten can contribute to inflammation. And like I said, it's not everybody, but it has to do with genetics.
Right. How do we figure out if we're intolerant?
Well, there's not really a test. I've tried looking for the test for the gene, but as far as just being intolerant to gluten, I mean, it's kind of a something you have to experiment with on your own. And I usually tell people, you know, to not eat it for 3 to 4 weeks. Because what happens is sometimes when we're eating something that we're intolerant to, the body adapts and it kind of is like, oh, okay, you're throwing this thing at me that's irritating, but I'm going to, like, try to figure this out and adapt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't really notice it. But then if we don't eat it for like 3 or 4 weeks and then we introduce it to our body, then sometimes we have a reaction if we're intolerant to it.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously there's celiac disease, which is a little bit, you know, different. I mean, it is very different, actually,
mm-hmm.
versus just an intolerance to gluten.
Hmm.
But gluten can be one of the foods that can promote inflammation. And so, like, these that I'm talking about now are ones that, you know, after you've mastered the sugar and the processed foods, you know, consider moving on to these. So
right.
Dairy would be another one, especially if it's from non-organic sources.
Mm. What makes a regular milk different than a organic milk for processing?
Right. So when it's organic, so the thing is that all the toxins are basically stored in fats of animals and animal products. And so when something is like yogurt or cheese or milk, when it's non-organic, it has more toxins than, you know, a non-organic one, and that can lead to inflammation.
Got it.
Yeah. So I'm always like meats and dairy, all those things that have fats, like I really recommend them to be organic.
Nice. That's good advice.
Yeah. Right. And then let's see what else. Corn. I can keep going. Corn.
Yeah, please do. We have time.
Okay. Corn. So especially if that's like, it's from genetically modified, sources, not so good. That changes our gut flora and, can lead to inflammation.
Oh, interesting. How does it do that?
That's
actually change
question.
Our gut flora.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I should really know the details. But it has to do with the genetically modified. Well, I don't want to overstep my boundaries here, but
I understand it's a delicate conversation.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But it can change our gut flora, which is not good.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So let's see. Mm-hmm. Soy is another one. Nightshades. I don't know if you've heard, Liz, that like nightshades can be inflammatory, especially for. And so nightshades, sorry, I should probably explain what those are.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes, potatoes, like peppers, an eggplant, those foods, I mean, they're considered healthy foods, right?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how they show up, though.
Yeah.
Like eating a tomato or a potato, and then you experience joint pain or something like that. It's interesting the way it shows up.
It is. It is. Yeah. I mean, and not everybody, you know, suffers from that, but particularly if you do have joint pains, to avoid those. And then let's see what else. Peanuts is another one. Hmm. And, you know, alcohol. And those are the main ones. I mean, coffee. I know everyone loves their coffee. Yeah. I sometimes when I say some of these things, I fear
people are cringing.
Going to be thrown at me. No, I think coffee is fine in moderation. You know, it's fine in moderation. 1 to 2 cups. It's just like that's a whole other story about the coffee and the adrenal glands and stress and taxing and stuff like that. But
can you discuss that a little bit? Because, if we're adding to our stress and stress depletes our immune system, it's worth chatting a little bit about.
Yeah. So I call coffee the cortisol dump.
Ooh.
So cortisol, like we talked about earlier, it's a stress hormone. It comes from our adrenal glands. And a lot of times when people are stressed, they're making a lot of cortisol. But after a while, the adrenal glands, they're like, oh, I'm so tired. I've been working so hard. And they like kind of slow down and stop producing as much cortisol. I mean, they're still making it. But so when we drink coffee in those situations, when we're tired, it causes the adrenals to release the cortisol.
Mm.
So that gives us energy. You know, oh, yeah, I got my coffee and I got my cortisol now. And it gives us energy. And so it does increase our cortisol, just as stress does, and that leads to, you know, immune suppression and so not good. Wow. And that's why I say in moderation it's fine.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing I would just say about coffee too is that sometimes people are drinking decaf and they're like, well, I'm drinking decaf, and that's great. But just make sure that you're drinking organic decaf, because the chemicals and the solvents that they use to make decaffeinated coffee are pretty toxic. So
good to know. I am a decaf coffee drinker when I drink it. Yeah.
Okay.
Caffeine is not my friend. So thank you so much for that information. I'll be switching to organic now.
Good. Let's see. What else is I going to say? I think that's about the list for the extra dietary recommendations for keeping inflammation low and keeping your immune system strong.
Awesome. That list of inflammatory foods really sounded like the high allergy list. So do you recommend the elimination diet over the blood tests?
I do. Yeah. I don't actually really do those blood tests. There's a little bit of a controversy about them. You know, I just know when I was a student at Bastyr, they had sent in a couple samples that were from the same person and they got different results. And So I just find that it's easier to get your blood drawn and find the result. But you just get better results from doing the elimination diet, you know, which is hard to, eliminate all those things, or can be hard for some people. And then to reintroduce them and to see how they affect you.
Cool. When people are doing the elimination diet, what are some of the subtle things that can pop up? Because I know people usually look for the big ones, right? But mostly they show up subtly.
Yeah. You mean like reactions?
Yes. Reactions. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, the big ones, you know, you think about is just like, you know, gut stuff, you know, diarrhea or gas and bloating. But there could be a myriad of things, you know. It could be things like brain fog, like you're not thinking clearly, or it could be, you know, rashes, or what else I'm trying to think, just like, urinary problems too, can be like having like urgency or frequency. Or fatigue's kind of a tricky one, you know, because it can come from a lot of things, but just plain old fatigue can be a result of an intolerance too.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come back around to gut restoration. And so what can we do to create a healthy gut? besides cutting out and adding, is there anything else like supplements or like kombuchas or anything like that?
Yeah. So the gut is super important for good health, just because the bugs that are in our gut, they are in control of so much. And our gut, you know, needs to have like two layers in our gut. The outside layer, I don't know if I'm saying that right. The layer closest to the lining of your gut is a mucus layer, and then above that is where it's the bacteria. And so if that's not intact, if we don't have a good diversity of bugs, and if we don't have a good mucus layer, then the gut can become leaky, like I was talking about with the gluten, because the bugs, if they're not in the right proportion, we have too many bad bacteria in the upper layer, it can eat through the mucus layer and then get in through the gut wall, and that creates inflammation in our body. But so the first thing is that just making sure, like if you've taken antibiotics, the biggest things that can disrupt that are, you know, antibiotics, stress, and not eating a proper diet. And so diet is huge here. I would say I usually recommend, in general, I recommend a whole foods diet where you're eating whole foods and not processed foods. But there's also great foods that help your gut. So there's two things, probiotic foods, and then there's prebiotic foods. So the probiotic foods, those are the foods that have beneficial bacteria. And so, like you said, kombucha is one of them. I do tell people not to drink too much of that. I mean, it's kind of addicting. I used to drink a ton of it. everything in moderation, of course.
Right.
But like kefir or kimchi and sauerkraut, also like pickles. There's some really good pickles that are not the ones that are just in the regular aisle. They have to be in the refrigerated section because they're fermented. Yogurt. Another good one, olives, miso, those are all probiotic foods. So they have the good bugs.
Yeah.
But then there's the prebiotic foods. And those are the foods that actually feed the good bugs in your gut. So it's like food for the good bugs.
Okay.
Yeah. And so let's see, with prebiotic foods, it's a lot of, I mean, vegetables. So onions, leeks, celery, carrots. What else? Broccoli stalks, beans. Beans are another one. Asparagus, artichokes, and I think that was all, most of them. I mean, there's plenty of other ones, but those are the ones that are highest in prebiotics. So that would be, you know, really important for keeping your gut health good. And of course, supplements too. So I do what's called a gut restoration protocol with many of my patients. And oftentimes this is when they have been, you know, they have done antibiotics when someone takes a course of antibiotics, it really like messes with the whole gut microbiome. And it can take a year to 2 years to try and like build up all the diversity and all the good bugs again.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It is. I thought it was much shorter than that.
Yeah. So particularly if my patients have, you know, had taken antibiotics recently, or they haven't been eating well, I will do a gut restoration protocol. And what I use is, it's called a spore-based probiotic. So your typical probiotics that you take, I mean, I just talked about all those foods, and those are great. But like as far as pills, when you take a pill, your typical probiotic pill, the bugs, they don't really take hold in your gut. They don't set up shop and start living there. You have to take it all the time to like get benefits from it. And so you take it and then you poop it out. And so the spore-based probiotic is a little bit different in that it will modulate your gut flora. So what it does is it goes in there, and it's not really going to take shop either, but it's going to kill off bad bugs, and it will allow the good bugs to thrive and grow. So it's kind of like just doing work when it goes in there. And that would, that's the gut restoration protocol starts with that, and then it adds in what we call the prebiotics, so also similar to the foods that I mentioned, but it's a powder that has different, what are called, they're called oligosaccharides, things that feed the good bugs.
Right.
And then the last step of the gut restoration protocol is it's a product that builds up the mucosal layer that I was talking about that's so protective of our gut. And so, you know, sometimes people can just do the foods and they're like feeling much better, or they're just making their gut really healthy. And then other times people need more support and they need the gut restoration protocol.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I do it.
Right. Would you say that now's a good time to, you know, possibly do that protocol? Regardless if we've had antibiotics or not?
Yeah, I would think, I would say it's an awesome time. And yeah, I did one of my YouTube videos on this, on how, again, it has to do with when our gut is not optimal, it becomes leaky, and then things get through the gut wall that are not supposed to, and then that creates inflammation. So it's a series of steps. But in the end result is when our gut isn't healthy, we have more inflammation in our body, and that can lead to more problems with this virus. Because, again, it has to do with the receptors that the virus uses to get in. And when we have more inflammation, those receptors are more abundant.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Besides cutting down on inflammation, what else does having a healthy gut do for our body?
Well, it also strengthens our immune system, because there are 70% of our immune system is located in the gut.
Wow.
And so there's, yeah, it's called gut-associated lymphoid tissue.
Hmm.
And it's, yeah, it's all in our gut. So when we have a healthy gut, then we have a healthy immune system. I mean, there's so many things that are connected to the gut, and I feel like it's going to become more and more well-known in medicine. But, you know, I mean, the mood, anxiety, and depression can be related to your gut flora being out of balance and the leaky gut, skin stuff, even like cardiovascular health, like blood pressure and also diabetes, huge with the gut, which is, you don't think about that, you know, and think about diabetes, oh, you're just not eating the right diet and you're not exercising or whatever. Not so much. I mean, this company that I work with that has sponsored the gut restoration protocol, they've done studies and they've done a lot of research around the gut and how it relates to other diseases, and that, you know, with diabetics, there was actually likely a problem with the gut first, and that led to, you know, the diabetes.
So oh, interesting.
Super, super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So
yeah.
You also talk about, you know, I'm going to go back, run back to the supplements. One of your emails that came in was about vitamin D and how that can benefit us right now. Can you discuss that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, so vitamin D, we typically think of that as being for bone health, and it is. Of course, it is for bone health. But it's also very involved with the immune system. So when we have adequate vitamin D, it actually boosts our immune system, this part of the immune system, the innate immune system. And that's the part of the immune system that responds to viruses and bacteria right away. It's like the first response when we get exposed. So adequate levels of vitamin D helps to keep that innate immune system strong. But it also, vitamin D, modulates the immune system. So what that means is keeps it in balance. And so when we have too much inflammation, vitamin D can come in and get that under control. And so it's like it does both the things that we need to focus on to, like, protect yourself from this virus. It boosts the immune system, keeps it strong, and it also gets inflammation under control.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Great.
It's like bang for your buck.
Right.
More bang for your buck. Yeah. So, so it's really interesting in that there was some, there was three studies that were, have been done in Asia since the virus came out, and where they found that, or they were observational studies. Yeah. Is what they were. And that what they found was that people who had very severe illness with this virus had lower levels of vitamin D, and that there was actually an 8-fold higher risk of severe illness in the people that had the lower vitamin D, which is huge, eight times higher. Yeah. So it's super important to be taking vitamin D, or checking what your vitamin D level is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not always essential. I mean, the thing is that we live here in the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, much of the northern part of our country, is we just don't get enough vitamin D. It comes from the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can get it when we go out into the sun. I assume that everyone knows these things. This is Dr. Lisa living in my medical world. So I realize I have to say, like, we get vitamin D when we go out into the sun. And so, but because of our latitude, it's harder for us to get it here. And so we have maybe 3 months where we can get vitamin D.
Wow.
And yeah, and so it's important to be taking it or having your levels checked, just to make sure that you have enough. So.
Oh, that's one of the ones on my shelf.
Yeah, good, good. I mean, so you can get it in, it's very hard to get, and I shouldn't say hard, but it's, there's not a lot of foods that have a lot of vitamin D. So salmon and herring and sardines, fish, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely for a vegetarian, the supplement is the way to go, especially, you know, in the winter and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, egg yolks have a little bit.
And mushrooms,
apparently. Yeah. So, so getting your sun when you can and taking a supplement was a good idea.
Cool. You also mentioned that they were using intravenous vitamin C in Asia.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? That's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, IV vitamin C is, you know, it's been, naturopaths have been using it, I don't know for how many years, but many of the, some of the naturopaths, I shouldn't say many, some naturopaths are using IV vitamin C for those that do IVs, and using it to help boost the immune system and using it in cancer, because we know that cancer is a disease of the immune system. Because if our immune system was functioning properly, it would be taking care of cells in our body that are replicating uncontrollably. And so if the immune system is not working well, then the tumor is able to grow. So IV vitamin C, you know, has been used particularly by naturopaths. I don't know about in conventional medicine, but because it helps the immune system. Now, in China, they did some studies in, I think it was like January, February, and all of this, I did learn this from one of my mentors, Dr. Paul Anderson, and he actually spent like a whole day, like, you know, reading or downloading studies in Mandarin and having them like converted to English so he could learn.
Awesome.
You know, and tell people. But the people who were very sick, that they gave IV vitamin C, and they gave a continuous infusion. So it was just like a drip that was, you know, going on for, you know, hours and days.
Mm-hmm.
But that people who were very ill, and like in the studies, there was no mortality. None of them died. And they had shorter hospital stays than the people who did not get them.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and there was a particular case where a patient was really going downhill, and they thought they were going to lose him, and gave him the IV vitamin C, and he came out of it. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, the only thing that's a little bit disappointing or frustrating is that it's not really accepted. It hasn't been accepted in this country, although I did hear that there was a hospital in New York that had used it I don't know if they're still. Yeah, I was trying to find more information, but I couldn't online. So
it's something that we definitely have to ask for.
Yes, and that's what I would say. You know, if you know somebody that is in the hospital, or you can speak to their family, and you know, tell them to ask for it. And like I said, I don't know if it's going to happen. But I think it's important to ask for it, because the more people that are talking about it, you know, the more there's more of a possibility that it will become accepted and, you know, mainstream.
Yeah, that would be nice. The more that we learn about the virus and what can we use, you know, to kind of battle it.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to add some things to our list.
Yeah, we don't know how long we're going to be dealing with this, you know. It's like we need all the tools that we can get.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, is it a high likelihood that we're looking at this again next year?
I don't know for sure. I mean, I'm not certainly not an expert on infectious diseases, but it sounds like it. I mean, they're comparing it, you know, to like, you know, the flu, or as far as like, you mean it's mutating, and hopefully it's going to mutate where it's not going to be as virulent, you know, as it maybe has been, but it's hard to say, you know. I mean, I was hoping back in March or April that this would just kind of die down.
But yeah, I was hoping that too.
It hasn't, so unfortunately.
Yeah. Wow. And so we've been inside on lockdown. For me, I've been in for 2.5 months now, like everyone, I'm sure, in King County. So is being out of the social environment and not exercising our immune system that way, is that actually hindering us in some way when we go back out? Are we going to have weak immune systems where we're more susceptible to getting something because we haven't been exercising our immune system by being around everything?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I guess when you first asked it, I was thinking more about the mental, emotional piece of it, you know, and that some people are really struggling with not having connection with people, and what are those effects that, you know, on us? And I think it's different with everybody. I mean I'm an introvert, and so is my husband, so we're just like, oh darn, we have to stay home, you know? So we don't mind it, but there's certainly people out there that are extroverts that, you know, want to like be more engaged, and it's a big part of their mental, emotional health. And so in that sense, I think, you know, it is a detriment, because we know that's probably stressful.
Yes.
And again, that's, you know, suppressive to the immune system.
Plus you get lonely, depression starts to set in a little bit. You're bored.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm an introvert as well, but after all, I was like, gosh, I really would like to visit a friend or something like that. Yeah. Thank God for Zoom.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah. But I think what you were asking more about is just like being alone and not being exposed to germs. Like, is that what you were saying maybe? Like,
yes. And having our immune system exercised by being around germs all the time where we're not in our house. Our houses are, we're used to our houses. Our immune system's used to our house. But when we go out and we're in the environment, we're getting exposed to more things, and that's exercising our immune system. So is that going to have an effect?
You know, I don't really know. I'm not super sold on that, like, idea that, you know, not being exposed to by going out, that it's going to make our immune system weaker. I mean, my thing is like, and in fact, I mean, the number one thing that I would say is that our stress, like out of, I mean, diet, sleep, gut health, stress. I mean, if I had to pick one thing that really has the most powerful effect on our immune system and our inflammation, I would say the stress piece.
Yeah.
You know, and so just focusing on that is really important. Just whatever ways that you need to reduce your stress or feel more at peace, you know, with what's going on. I mean, I know it's hard, but that's like the most important thing I think you can do. So.
Yeah, I would agree. Gosh, when I've been stressed, it's affected sleep. It's affected my diet, everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that would be great. Would you mind touching again on those things now that we're nearing the end, on what you know, how we can relieve that stress. One more time. Yeah.
Oh, and touching on the things to reduce stress.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's very individual, but exercise is a really great one. And that's, you know, I picked four things for today, you know, the diet, sleep, stress, and gut health. But, you know, exercise is big on the list, too. And exercise is important for keeping our inflammation down. I mean, now the right type of exercise, moderate exercise is good for that. If you're doing super duper intense exercise, it actually can create more inflammation. So I mean, in reviewing the ways to reduce stress, if I had to pick, you know, one really important one, I would say exercise. Whatever it is that helps you, or that you enjoy doing, you know, as far as exercise, maybe it's, you know, you like yoga, or maybe you like Pilates, or maybe you like strength training, or walking, or swimming, whatever it is, dancing. so many options. Hiking. So pick, you know, whatever it is that you enjoy. And that's the thing with exercise. Like, you really want to enjoy it. You don't want it to be like a task or a duty, like, oh, I got to go do my exercise now. You want to enjoy it.
Yes, especially now.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as reducing stress, that would be my favorite way for people to reduce stress.
Cool.
Again, you know, other things can be journaling, meditation. And again, you know, meditation, if you've never done it, there's a lot of different apps you can check out. I think Insight Timer, mm-hmm. or Calm app. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones.
Lots on YouTube, and all the leaders have many, yes. many recordings you can listen to now.
Yes, absolutely. It's amazing how much is on the internet, right?
And there's so much content, especially right now. We're flooded with content right now.
I know. Tell me about it. I get like so many emails, and I'm like, oh, that looks so interesting. I want to watch that. And I'm like, oh, I don't have time.
Yeah, that's what I'm finding too. There's so much coming in that I wish I could see it all, but I can't.
Yeah.
I can't fit it in. Right. It's so funny.
Right.
What else would you say could increase our resilience right now?
Oh, well, let's see. I think we've talked about so much. You know, other things, I mean, I find that breathing, breath work is really great, because when we breathe, we are balancing our nervous system. So there's two parts of our nervous system. There's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And the sympathetic is the stress part of us, and the parasympathetic is the rest. And so when we do breathing, I use HeartMath. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, Liz. But,
oh, I have.
Yeah, it's an app that you can use on your phone, and you can measure your heart rate variability. And so when our heart rate, when we breathe in, our heart rate increases. And when we breathe out, our heart rate decreases. And so there's this like 10 to 20 point difference. I mean, you wouldn't know it normally. Like, really? Your heart rate increases when you breathe in and it decreases when you breathe out.
I thought that was fascinating too.
Yeah. So when we have that optimal heart rate variability, we're in the parasympathetic state, which is the calming state, and it's the healing state, and it's the resting state. And so it's something that I sometimes recommend to my patients to do your heart math. I mean, you could just do it breathing and stuff, but some people like to monitor and see how they're doing. So that's another way to really...
Oh, that's great advice.
Like, yeah, balance the nervous system and reduce stress at the same time to become more resilient.
I did an episode with Robert Lippman not too long ago.
And, oh, you did?
Yeah, our listeners can find that online as well. He goes into a lot of the same things that you were just talking about. It's a great resource here on Island. Dr. Lisa, what do you do? What does your typical day look like keeping yourself healthy?
Yeah, okay. Well, my typical day is I wake up and I do a little bit of meditation and prayer, and I drink a nice big jar of warm lemon water in the mornings. It's cleansing. And then I get up and I exercise. So I do strength training mostly. I love strength training for good health. I mean, I do just like 15 minutes. That's it. 15-20 minutes. You know, and then I actually do also do intermittent fasting, which is, and I think of this because it's like in the morning time, it's like make breakfast, hurry, get out the door. And like, I don't have to do that anymore. I eat at like 11 o'clock or noon. Usually noon is when I eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And then, you know, I'm at work and seeing patients and doing a lot of telemedicine these days, but eat my lunch around noon. And then I get done with work around 5 and I go home and then cook dinner and have a nice dinner with my husband. And yeah, and then I try to relax. I mean, I have to admit I'm not the best. I'm not, and as I'm like talking about this stuff, I'm coaching myself too, because I have a tendency to like work, you know. I'm like, oh, I have to look this up for this patient, mm-hmm. or I have to message this person, or I have to finish off my, you know, invoices or whatever. And it's like, I have to be aware and try to really be diligent about taking care of myself and doing that resting in the evening and trying to wind down so I can get good sleep.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you would like to share as we finish up our talk today?
I guess the only thing would really be, you know, to just let people know, like, to reach out for help if you need it. Like, whoever it is that you need help from, you know, I mean, I'm here to help you, or you may already have a doctor that can help you, or maybe it's a counselor, or maybe it's a personal trainer, or, you know, a body worker, or whatever. Like, whatever it is that you think that you're needing in this time, so don't be afraid to reach out for help, because we all need support, because this is a really crazy time right now. And so that's just, don't be afraid.
Oh, that's great advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially right now, there's so much going on. Reach out if you need somebody or something, for sure. We have a lot of great people on Island. And reach out to Dr. Lisa. She's fantastic. And Dr. Lisa, can you share how they can get a hold of you?
Sure. You can go to my website, which is www.ferncovenaturalmedicine.com. You can send me a message there. You can also call me, 206-693-4143. And then you can also follow me, message me on Instagram. It's dr.lisamorse on Instagram. And then I also have a Facebook page, Fern Cove Natural Medicine. So any of those ways you can message me.
Great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Lisa. I really appreciate you being here today. Thank you
You're
for
welcome.
All of the great advice. And
good,
information.
I enjoyed it. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you asking me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. This is Liz Peterson on Raise the Vibe, KVSH, Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Have a great day. And remember to get out there and raise the vibe.